Hello, everyone, and happy Sunday evening. I just want to say before I get started, Lynn, that I won't be here next Sunday night. I'll be on a plane during this time. So I wanted to let you know. I also, of course, won't be here next Sunday night for the daily contemplation because of the same plane. And tonight we are going to begin with, quote, 717. Let me give you a link to that in my journal. There is 717. I also want to say that since we've played the two Michael Langford audios and two Ellie Ruzdahr audios, one where Lynn interviewed her and one where I interviewed her. So after those four audios, I've received a lot of questions. I'm still receiving questions from people about some of the things that Michael Langford and or Ellie Ruzdahr said. So we have a member meeting coming up 2 weeks from tonight. Let me see what that date is. June 5, 2 weeks from tonight, June 5. I will do the seven steps then at 7 p.m. Eastern time, but then at 8 p.m. Eastern time, I have a couple of announcements I'll make regarding Awakening Together. They shouldn't take more than 10 minutes, if that long. And then I'm going to spend the rest of the time answering questions about the Michael Langford and Ellie Ruzdahr audios. I'll be focusing on the questions I've received in email. They're basically the same questions coming from different people. But if you have a question that you want to email me to make sure that's considered that night, that's great. If there's something that's kind of not settled with you after listening to the Michael Langford and Ellie Ruzdahr audios, also you can ask questions live that night as well. But I'm getting, you know, the same questions over and over again, which is why I'm feeling that it needs to be kind of addressed. So again, I won't be here next week. I will be here 2 weeks from tonight, which is June 5th, first for the seven steps at 7 p.m., and then for the member meeting at 8 p.m., when the majority of the member meeting, I will focus on answering questions about the Michael Langford and Ellie Ruzdahr audios. As you all know, when I do the seven steps, I like to start by playing a song. It's kind of my prayer. And Nancy emailed me a song. I just checked email for the first time today, about 2 minutes ago. So I just saw it. I haven't listened to it yet. And I thought, well, that's great. We'll listen to that song then, Nancy. I hope it's okay. We'll listen to that song as the opening to the seven steps teaching tonight. So this is the song that Nancy sent to me. It's Ruthie Foster, whom I love. And the name of the song is Woke Up This Morning.
Yeah. I woke up this morning with my mind.
And that's a good thing, wake up with your mind.
War is hate on freedom. Oh, I woke up this morning with my mind. Said I woke up this morning with my mind saved. Oh, hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
Stay on the tree, I'm walking and talking with my mind.
song. Thank you very much, Nancy, for sending that to me. I'm noticing that Dolores said that they sang that song in church when she was young. They sang it, woke up this morning with my mind stayed on Jesus. So yeah, that's a great song. Love that idea. I woke up this morning with my mind stayed on freedom. So thank you. It's a perfect song, Nancy, and I will add it to my playlist. Thank you very much for sharing it. All right, so we are now ready after that little bit of gospel music. We're now ready to move into quote number 717 from step 3 of the 7 steps to awakening. And let me read that quote to you. This supreme consciousness alone exists. It is the supreme truth, untainted by any impurity, forever in a state of perfect equilibrium and devoid of ego sense. Once this truth is realized, it shines constantly without setting. And I will tell you that I love promises like that. I trust promises like that. You know, I've read promises like that from Jesus. I've heard promises like that from Elie Ruzdar and Michael Langford. We read promises like that right here. I believe this is from the Yoga Vasistha. You know, I love these promises that once truth is realized. Well, for lack of better words, there's no going back. Once truth is realized, it is simply, like it says here, it shines constantly without setting. There's a promise like that in NTI too. Let me see if I can read what NTI says about that. It seems to me like it's in NTI 1 Corinthians. Is that correct? Yeah, this talks about, now NTI teaches 4 phases of the awakening process. The first phase is the search, and the search is really even searching for, I would call it searching for the path, you know, like, you know, we aren't even certain which path is the right path to walk on. You know, we may try several different things. You know, we're really searching for even the beginning point of the spiritual path. So that's what NTI calls phase 1 of the spiritual path is the search. Phase 2 is purification, the letting go of false beliefs. Phase 3 is service, and it's through service, which NTI defines as listening to the Holy Spirit, or what I would now call inner intuition, instead of the thinking mind. That's what service is. And through service, we merge with the Holy Spirit, which means that the identity that we had before is fading. And then this fourth phase is what many people would call enlightenment. It's what A Course in Miracles would call probably the real world. It's somewhat of a state of awakening compared to the state that we were at before. But yet it's not yet that full and complete ego death. And that's the fourth and final phase. And then after that phase, the next thing that would happen would be awakening, or ego death, or what the Course would call going from the real world to heaven. So this fourth phase then is this awakened state, which is still not ego death, but it's definitely awakened compared to when we listen to and believe the ego fully, right? And it says, the purpose of your life in the fourth phase of living on earth shall not be different than the purpose at any other time, which means the purpose is still the end of the ego, because the ego has not died yet. Only now, in the fourth phase, the distractions have been erased. So we no longer have multiple purposes pulling at us. It's not that I want to end the ego and I want a romantic relationship and I want money and I want my mother to respect me. Right? All of this purification has happened. Learning to listen to the inner intuition over the ego mind has happened. Some kind of an awakening has happened, although it's not yet the end of ego. And now we're really focused on only one purpose. So there's no distractions now. This is full focus without distraction. So only now in the fourth phase, the distractions have been erased. In letting yourself become an empty shell, you freed yourself from the desire for distraction. Now, in the fourth phase, your focus is complete. Now you know what you want, and you want it wholly. During the fourth phase, there are no distractions. During the fourth phase, there are no fears, there are no doubts, and there is no feeling of guilt. There is only a knowing of what is true, and a life that is the willingness for acceptance. The one that seems to be in the fourth stage is but a symbol of the truth that is. So this one must pass away also, right? It's referring to the ego death still needs to happen. So this one must pass away also. But in its passing, you pass from a final illusion of beauty, that's beauty with a little b, to beauty that cannot be contained in illusion. And that second beauty has a capital B. I'll read that again. The one, meaning the person, the person with true perception, the fairly enlightened or awake person, but there's still, again, there's still a person here, right? The one that seems to be in the fourth stage is but a symbol of the truth that is. So this one must pass away also. But in its passing, you pass from a final illusion of beauty to beauty that cannot be contained in illusion. You pass from form, which reflects light, to light, which shines into form. You shall not know death in your passing from the fourth phase to light, for this passing is recognition of life. This passing is acceptance of all that is true and all that has always been true. This passing is the final release of illusion, so that no illusion may appear to you. And death is an illusion. So you shall not know death because you have accepted that illusion does not exist. The door that is opened is the doorway to the light, which is also the doorway to your true self and your brothers who are one with you. And then here's the part that brought this to my attention. In passing through that doorway, you cannot return. For to return would be to pass from awareness to the belief in lack of awareness and division. One who knows wholeness after experiencing the lack of wholeness knows illusion is no substitute for truth. He shall not choose illusion again. So again, what NTI is saying here is once that final awakening happens, which it actually calls a death, right, a passing away, once that final awakening happens, it is final. There's no return to illusion. There's no return to delusion. There's no return to believing I'm a person. There's no return to the ego sense. And that's exactly what this quote, 717, is also saying. Here's the quote again. The Supreme Consciousness alone exists. It is the supreme truth, untainted by any impurity, forever in a state of perfect equilibrium and devoid of ego sense. Once this truth is realized, it shines constantly without setting. So the sun that doesn't set, right? No more slipping back into confusion or delusion. So you know, assuming these promises are true, and I actually do take them on faith, I do assume that they are true, that would mean that if we have a state of great clarity, but then we can still, when certain things happen, slip back into confusion, delusion, pain, suffering, not sure what's ego, not sure what's Holy Spirit, all of that, that means that awakening really has not occurred yet, right? Because when awakening happens, when that waking up really does happen, there's no coming back to illusion. So why don't we go and see what I wrote in the journal? It looks like I was contemplating this quote on March 25th, 2013. And this is what I wrote. There is a fundamental confusion between what is real and what is unreal. This fundamental confusion itself keeps the unreal seeming real. Therefore, the answer to all problems and the clarity that ends all suffering is seeing beyond this one confusion. And again, that fundamental confusion is a confusion between what is real and what is unreal. During the Ellie Ruzdar interview from a few weeks ago, when I interviewed her, I think that was on May 15th, something like that. You know, there are a few things that she said that certainly has continued to ring in my head. I've listened to the interview a couple of times. I actually plan to transcribe the interview. I think that transcribing the interview will be a really good practice. But one of the things that she said that has continued to ring in my mind, she presented the idea of a mind that is mature enough to accept awakening. I actually told the story, but it was her story. I had heard it in a Buddha at the gas pump interview, but she asked me to go ahead and tell it, and I'll tell it again now for those of you who might not have heard the interview or simply might not remember the story. But there was a story that I told about, you know, you have a young boy, maybe 3 years old, maybe 5 years old, and you have in one hand an ice cream cone, and in another hand you have this huge diamond that's just worth a lot of money. And you ask the little boy which one he wants, and he's going to take the ice cream cone. But if you have a more mature man, maybe 35 years old, maybe 42 years old, something like that, and you give him the same choice between the ice cream cone or this really expensive diamond, he's definitely going to take the diamond because he knows the value of the diamond. Well, the ice cream cone represents the unreal. And the diamond represents the truth. And the immature mind, meaning the mind that is not yet ready to accept truth, the immature mind is much more interested in the unreal. Much more interested in me and my life and my problems and my thoughts, and then that can, of course, extend out to my family and my job. You know, I have to remain the center, right? That's the unreal. And the immature mind, and if you listen to this very carefully, you will hear very clearly that the vast majority of the people in the world, even here on the spiritual path, still have that immature mind that is very, very interested in the unreal. That's the ice cream cone. That's the immature mind. And when our mind comes up with, you know, whatever problems appear in our life, we're very, very interested in those problems, very, very interested in coming up with solutions to those problems. The mature mind wants the truth, wants reality. The mature mind, when it is presented with reality, says yes. It has learned the value of truth. But the immature mind has not. I remembered recently. Yes, I remember. Today I was walking. I was doing meditative walking. So I was very much in awareness as I was doing this walking. In fact, during the walking, there was the sense that the walking was happening in me, not that I was doing the walking. So this was really a very meditative state where I was watching awareness and walking. And so I was not really in the mind. In fact, there were very little thoughts at all. A thought might cross my mind occasionally, but there were very few thoughts at all during this walk. And as I was having the walk, a memory came. It was a memory of many, many years ago when I was driving to get some food. I had just bought my first home, and Ron was painting the inside of it or laying tile or something. You know, that first home was very cheap and it needed some work done on the inside. So he was doing some kind of work to get the house ready for me. And we were hungry. And of course, you know, I didn't live there yet. There was no food or anything. So even though it was a snowstorm, I went out to a seafood restaurant, I think, to pick up some food. And on the way back, I had the food in the car and I was heading back home. On the way back, the car slipped on some ice, and it wasn't a big deal at first. There wasn't a big deal at first. The car just kind of slid and then hit a curb and stopped. But then I looked over my shoulder and I saw that the vehicle behind me was doing the exact same thing and coming right at me. The problem is the vehicle behind me was a snowplow. So there's this huge, and I'm in a little bitty Toyota Corolla, and there's this huge snowplow coming right at me. And I could see the plow coming right for my head. Now what happened, and any of you who have been in serious accidents before, you may have had the same thing happen to you. What happened is this couldn't have been more than a couple of seconds, but this turned into eternity. I could see that snowplow coming right at my head. I saw the plow break through my window. I saw each little line. I mean, the window shattered, right? It shattered. But I saw each little line of that shattering happening. I mean, I was able to sit there and watch all of these lines draw and the window shatter. And I was able to realize that I needed to lay down, and I laid down on my side with my head in the passenger seat, and the plow came in right over top of me and then stopped. And there wasn't a scratch on my body. My car was totaled, but there wasn't a scratch on my body. And after that, I don't really remember. I don't remember how I got out of the car. Maybe the snowplow backed up or something. I don't really remember because the plow was in my car. But what I do remember is when I got out of the car, I was dancing. Oh my God, I was just dancing. And I remember the snowplow driver being shocked because he probably thought he had killed me, right? And instead, I'm dancing in the snow. But the reason that memory came today, I think, at least what it said to me when I was doing this walking, this meditative walking where I was very, very focused on awareness, was I saw that in that moment, when that accident happened, I was in awareness. And, you know, this was a long time ago, you know, what I would call it before the spiritual path. And I was very amazed by that experience. But there was nothing in me that latched onto that experience in some way and wanted to, as Elie Ruzdar says, claim it, wanted to stay in that eternal state of mind. When it was over, I left that state of mind just as quickly as it happened. And you may remember that Elie Ruzdar talked to us, and she said the mature mind, she said it can even happen during like a disaster. It can suddenly be there, and the mature mind will claim it. And so when I had that realization this morning while walking, I thought, you know, there was no interest in staying in that awareness. And even now, the interest must still be developing because I was in a very strong state of awareness today while walking, but I did not stay there. So, back to the journal entry. There is a fundamental confusion between what is real and what is unreal. What I see this fundamental confusion as is that we have more interest in the unreal than the real. We're still like the 3 or 4 year old that would take the ice cream cone and refuse the diamond. And in fact, every now and then when somebody gets some sort of an idea, although I don't know that the ideas are ever correct, but someone, you know, maybe in one of my MPP classes or something, will get some idea about what reality is, and they will literally say, I'm sure you've heard these words, maybe you've even said them yourself, they will literally say, that sounds boring. And to the ego or to the immature mind, reality is boring. In fact, let me just play a little bit of a song. I don't think I'll play this entire song because it's a little bit long. But I don't think I have to play the entire song for you guys to get the feeling of the song. Here it is. This is called Heaven by Jessica Lurie. Let's listen to just a little bit of this song. Great song, but I don't want to take 6 minutes right now to listen to a song. But, you know, you heard that. And she says, first of all, everybody's trying to get to the bar. The name of the bar is Heaven. And then she says, You know, heaven plays my favorite song. It plays the same song all night long. It never plays a different song. And then she says, heaven is a place where nothing ever happens. And when people start to get some kind of a realization of that, maybe they're contemplating a Nisargadatta quote or a Ramana Maharshi quote or something like that, and they start to get some kind of a sense of that, a lot of people will say, but that sounds boring. Right? That's the immature mind. We're much more attracted to the drama. To the drama of the ego, the drama of the problems. We love me. Even if we think that we hate me, even if we think that, you know, we're suffering with this me. We love me. Me is our favorite topic. And of course, I'm not referring to Regina here, except in Regina's case. Right? Me is our favorite topic. And you all, if you listen to me carefully, you may have heard me say several times over the last few months that I feel like my job right now, my primary function, is falling in love with the true self. Or we could call it falling in love with awareness. Falling in love with being. Which also means falling out of love with the mind. Here's a quote. This is a book that Michael Langford wrote. It's called 65 Brilliant Choices That Lead to Less Problems, More Joy, and Skillful Living. And this is brilliant choice number 42, which I love brilliant choice number 42 because it really is my purpose right now. Place great value on the eternal. Place very little value on the temporary. Your true self is eternal. See that your true self is the only thing of real value. Love your true self. Cherish your true self. You can live brilliantly and skillfully in the temporary world while remembering that only the eternal has real value. Actions in the temporary world have consequences. Therefore, live skillfully. You know, go ahead and look both ways before you cross the street, for example. But, you know, that's exactly what this journal entry is talking about. There is a fundamental confusion between what is real and what is unreal. We think what is unreal has the value. That's the immature mind that Elie Ruzdar was talking about. And we need to learn that the unreal has no value and that the real is the only thing that has value. And that's what this brilliant choice is, written by Michael Langford. Place great value on the eternal. Place very little value on the temporary. Right? So I think it's helpful to be aware that this is a part of the maturing process. The teachings of Inner Ramana, which, as you probably know, is a book that came to me in 2009, the teachings of Inner Ramana says something like, I'm not going to go to the trouble to look for exactly where it is, but it says something like, what we need to do now is lose interest in the mind. Losing interest in the mind is recognizing that the unreal has no value. So we're getting very consistent messages here from the Yoga Vasistha, Elie Ruzdar, Michael Langford, Inner Ramana, right? Yeah, and I don't know who Opaline is, but I had this realization myself. The word boring cannot occur to a fully conscious, fully present human being. Boring itself, that is a mental concept. So if we're believing that something is boring or that I am bored, in that moment, we're believing mind. We have not lost interest in the unreal. In fact, we're believing the unreal in the moment that we're believing the idea of boring. Isn't that funny? That itself is unreal. Thank you, Opal Line 2. So let's go back to 717A. There is a fundamental confusion. This is the immature mind. There is a fundamental confusion between what is real and what is unreal. The fundamental confusion itself keeps the unreal seeming real. That's because of our interest, our placing value on it, on those stories, on those problems, on those situations. The fundamental confusion itself keeps the unreal seeming real. Therefore, the answer to all problems and the clarity that ends all suffering is seeing beyond this one confusion. So let's go on to 717B. says, everything unreal does not exist. The belief that it does exist is the one fundamental confusion. Now I know, and I know that most of you know, if not all of you know, that A Course in Miracles starts with something very, very similar, right? In the introduction, it says, nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. And most of you can probably quote that way better than me. I had to open the book to make sure I didn't mess it up. And some of you guys could quote it perfectly without having to open the book. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. And, you know, I have many, many times in my, 12 years on, in this spiritual community, heard people say, oh, nothing unreal exists. Oh, that doesn't even exist. That war does not exist. That, those starving people in Ethiopia do not exist. And yet, those same people are completely able to worry and worry and worry about little things in their personal life. In other words, the only reason I can say that war does not exist is because that war is not touching me. But if something touches me, my life, my child's life, my parents' health, right, my finances, if something touches me, I can't say that does not exist. I'm now completely absorbed in all of my worries and all of my thoughts and all of my anger and whatever else is being brought up with this situation. Which means that the statement that does not exist, that is just a statement we can say when we have no compassion. It's just a lack of compassion coming out of our mouth. What we need to learn is that the stories that are going on in our minds that are telling us about my problems, how things aren't right in my life, how this shouldn't be, et cetera, et cetera. We need to see is that we are placing too much value on those stories in my mind. That's what we need to see. And we need to begin to lose interest right there in the stories in my mind about me, my life, and mine. That's where this starts. It doesn't start by denying some war that doesn't seem to touch me at all, or someone else's pain that doesn't seem to touch me at all. It starts right here with what seems to touch me completely. And every time I get caught up in one of these stories about me, my life, and mine, I'm taking the ice cream cone. And so I need to begin to lose interest in the stories. And you know what I discovered? Is that's actually not that hard. I mean, it took a bit of practice, maybe 5 years of practice in my case. But it's not that hard. Because you know what I discovered is that at least 95% of those stories, they don't even have a basis of fact right here in form. You know, like the story about how I'm going to lose my house, for example. You know, if that's a story that runs in the mind, I'm going to lose my house, I'm going to lose all my money, I'm going to lose my house, we're going to be homeless. And, you know, this story's all going on while I'm sitting there safe and sound in my house, right? And it never even happens. Something happens, you know, a job shows up or a gift shows up or something happens where the house was never lost. I mean, all of that worrying, it didn't even take place here in what we call the dream. 95% of that stuff in the mind has no basis even in illusory reality, even in temporary reality. It is just chatter. Why can't we lose interest in it? There's no truth to it anywhere, anywhere, anywhere. Start looking, if you don't believe me, pay attention to how often your mind is completely wrong. How often it doesn't work out the way your mind says. You know, another thing the mind loves to do is it loves to tell you what other people are thinking about you. There's a line in NTI that says, whatever you think your brother thinks is a thought in your mind that you need to be watching. Right? So we're walking around listening to these stories in our own mind about what that person over there and that person over there and that person over there thinks about me, and we don't even see that that's a story in my mind. We're taking the ice cream cone over and over again. So interested in our own thoughts. And they are so wrong. There's nothing better than finding out that your mind is wrong 95% of the time. Because when you discover that your mind is wrong 95% of the time, you suddenly start to realize, ah, then I don't need to be listening to it. And that's the beginning of freedom. So again, 717B says, everything unreal does not exist. The belief that it does exist is the one fundamental confusion. So especially listening to 95% of those thoughts in our mind that have nothing to do with anything except our own imagination, what a waste of time and energy. And so many people get so worried. I mean, they're suffering because of these imaginary stories in their mind that are never going to be true, even in the temporary world. You see, that's the fundamental confusion. That is completely being confused about what is real. We think our imagination is real. Everything unreal does not exist. The belief that it does exist is the one fundamental confusion. Let's go on to 717C. Let me just read the quote again. The quote from the Yoga Vasistha and the Seven Steps to Awakening is, this supreme consciousness alone exists. It is the supreme truth, untainted by any impurity, forever in a state of perfect equilibrium and devoid of ego sense. Once this truth is realized, it shines constantly without setting. And so what we seem to be looking at here, because this is what I seem to be looking at when I contemplated this quote in March of 2013, is how much we aren't realized, how much we still believe the unreal, how much we're still taking the ice cream cone instead of the diamond. Because, you know, we need to see this first. We need to see this first. You can't reverse a habit until you see the habit. You have to see the habit, recognize you have the habit, and then you can begin to reverse the habit. All right, so 717C says, the one reality which exists as the only reality and as that which I am is forever untouched by everything unreal. Now, I love that fact. And maybe loving that fact is a part of beginning to shift my value from the ice cream cone to the diamond. Or as Michael Langford says in Brilliant Choice number 42, place great value on the eternal. Place very little value on the temporary. Your true self is eternal. See that your true self is the only thing of real value. Love your true self. Cherish your true self. I love this growing awareness that what I am is perfectly untouched. And I know that I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again because it's coming up now. You know, like the time that I got thrown off the horse, right? I was thrown off that horse while it was galloping. I hit the ground hard. There was an incredible amount of pain. I did not know if my back was broken or not broken. I did not know if I would ever move again. I did not know if I was paralyzed for life. But I checked. You know, I have this habit now of checking. It's like a practice. I call it checking. It's checking. I look at awareness for maybe only a couple of seconds, you know, while I'm moving about in the day, doing whatever I'm doing. But I pause and I look at awareness, and I notice that awareness is untouched. I started doing this a few years ago when I was listening to Muji for about a nine-month period. I started noticing what I called that which is constant. And I started checking it, and it became like a game. You know, if I was sick, if the body was sick, I would check and notice that awareness is the same now while the body is sick as it was when the body was healthy, that awareness had not changed between health and sickness. Or if I was sad, I would check and I would notice that awareness is actually the same. It can look at the sadness, but awareness itself is unaffected. It's the same during sadness as it is during happiness, right? And I began to play this game, this checking. And by the time I was thrown off the horse, I had been doing this for at least a few years, 3 to 4 years, right? Probably 3 years. So checking was a new habit, a new habit. And so when I got thrown from the horse, boom, and I hit that ground, I mean, maybe there was a couple seconds there where, you know, I didn't know what was going on. That's very possible. But as soon as I recognized what was going on, the first thing I did was check. And I noticed that awareness was the same. Awareness, once the body was thrown off the horse, was the same as awareness was before the body was thrown off the horse. So this checking excites me. This checking is helping me get to know myself, which is unaffected. And I see value in that. I see great value in that unaffected self. And what happens is I noticed this desire in me wanting to know it more and more and more. And even, and maybe this is the ego's readiness starting to happen, I don't know for sure, but I even would love to be able to, like, crawl inside of this unaffected awareness. Like it was a, NTI talks about slits in the script, like the whole world is a script, but there are these slits in the script where we can exit the script. Well, this slit in a script, in the script goes right into awareness. And I would love to be able to go into that slit in the script and disappear there or die there and not ever have the affected reemerge. And that's what I think they mean by ego death. And that is what I think Elie Ruzdahl is saying, the mature mind can do that. The mature mind can recognize that awareness, and she says claim it, but I think it means can crawl inside and let the affected die inside of the unaffected. And to me, that's the purpose of meditation right now. The purpose of meditation is to become more and more and more accustomed to that true self as myself. Become more and more and more accustomed to that true self as myself. And even as Michael Langford says here, not only that, but to love your true self, cherish your true self, that unaffectedness, so that the ego is being prepared to crawl through the slit in the script, whether it happens to be in a car accident, or whether it happens to be during meditation, right? Whenever the slit in the script is there, because what we're seeing or what I'm seeing is they are there. It was there during the car accident and I just wasn't ready for it, right? It is there at different points during meditation. I must still not be ready for it, and that's okay. But I'm using meditation to become more and more and more accustomed so that at some point, through the slit in the script, letting it seal up behind the mind so that the mind never reemerges as the self. It doesn't mean the mind won't be there maybe to, like, read, balance a checkbook, drive a car, right? But the mind never reemerges as the self. It dies. The affected self dies in the unaffected self. It drowns there. So, 717C says, the one reality which exists as the only reality and as that which I am is forever untouched by everything unreal. And I was just stating that that is a fact. So let's go to 717D. What exists and what is I, which is also forever and consistently untouched and unaffected? And, you know, Jacqueline talked this morning about the I thought, right? That's not what this is referring to. This isn't referring to the I thought. This is referring to what is really me. And again, we can't avoid words, so here we are using those same sucky words, me and I. Right? But again, those of you who have known me forever, you know about my experience of being an apple, and you know that that experience was not at all human. There was no thinking like a human. There was no seeing like a human. There were no labels, no concepts. There was nothing human about it. And yet, I still say, I was an apple. I'm not referring to Regina. I'm not referring to a person at all. I'm referring to that awareness, I suppose. But I don't know what else to be. It was awareness. I was aware of the experience, right? I, the awareness, had this experience of being an apple. So this question says, what exists? It exists. It's alive. What exists? And what is I? The same thing that exists is I. What exists and what is I, which is also forever and consistently untouched and unaffected. Start checking. Start looking. Start asking. It's right here, right now, and it's real. It has nothing to do with the me that has problems. It has nothing to do with the I in thought. But it's what I am. It is me. Yeah, choose the diamond instead of the ice cream. Hello, Michael. I didn't know you were here. It's good to see you. Choose the diamond instead of the ice cream. Or at least be in training. You know, there is a growing up period that happens between ages 3 and 4 and ages 35 to 42. So maybe we're in that growing up period. Maybe we're not quite ready to take the diamond, in all honesty. But maybe we're starting to notice that there's more value in the diamond than the ice cream. And maybe we can put our attention to that noticing more and more and more and more. And in this way, the mind matures. Yeah, Michael is saying, choose eternal bliss instead of the yummy sandwich. The yummy sandwich, which refers to a story of his about how when he would go and listen to Jay Krishnamurti, when Jay Krishnamurti ended, everybody else would get up and rush off to lunch to have the yummy sandwich. But he stayed and contemplated what Krishnamurti had just said. Because the diamond was becoming much more interesting to him than the ice cream. The extra hour of contemplation, much more important than the yummy sandwich. And I think this is what we're all being asked to look at right now, or Michael wouldn't be here with us. Ellie would not have come and been here with us. I would not be teaching these things, right? You would not be listening. The reason we're here together, paying attention to this, is because we are ready to mature. All right, I'm going to let go of the mic now, and I believe, I'll let Lynn introduce Jacqueline. All right, letting go of the mic. Thank you, you guys, for hanging out with me tonight, and I'll be hanging out with you for the rest of the night.